Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
In the late 1970s, disco strapped on a pair of wheels. This is Soundcheck, and I'm Elliot Forrest from WQXR in today for John Schaefer. Today, the hand-in-hand history of roller skating and music, plus a vanished venue tour of the self-proclaimed birthplace of roller disco right here in New York City, and a live performance from Rockroots musician J.D. McPherson. But to begin, you might have heard about the new temporary roller skating rink that's just opened up underneath the Highline Park on Manhattan's west side. Roller skating, however, is hardly new to the city. 30 years ago, the roller disco craze swept New York, leaving in its wake a number of roller disco-themed hits, some extremely talented skaters, and several now-defunct rinks throughout the New York City area. Later in the show, we'll continue our vanished venue series as we remember one of these roller disco hotspots, the Empire Roller Skating Center in Crown Heights, Brooklyn. But first, let's learn a bit more about roller skating's musical history. Joining me now by phone from London, Ontario, is Romy Poletti, who wrote her master's thesis at McGill University on the history of roller skating and music. Romy, thanks for joining us on Soundcheck.
Hi, Elliot. Thanks so much.
You know, I guess it wasn't just people skating to music. There was more to it, and it was more like dancing. How do you describe roller disco?
Well, roller disco is an interesting era of history that had all sorts of things that were happening on the roller skating rink. Apart from the movement, there were racial issues going on, gender issues going on, and it was just a magical moment in history where there were also regional elements happening, where there were all different kinds of skating styles happening across the country.
So the roller discoing in New York would not be the same kind of roller discoing you would see in Los Angeles or Texas?
Absolutely not. And it depends on the history of roller disco, what era you're talking about. If you're talking about mid-70s, roller disco, it was a lot different. It was much more subversive as opposed to, let's say, the early 80s roller disco that could be found in any Midwestern roller skating rink that were performed by 8 to, 15-year-olds.
Let me turn back the hands of time for a moment. Let's early music at the rink, building our way up to roller disco. First of all, I guess skating was mostly on the sidewalks before it went into the rinks, right?
That's not necessarily true, actually, because the problem is that with technology, the roller skating, the sort of wheel itself had to have plastic on it for it to be outside. The original roller skate was metal, so it needed to be on wood, which is why it's always been indoors. Only when the rollerblade came out did roller skating hit the outdoors.
Oh, that's interesting. I didn't realize that. So when did all the rinks come about? What year are we talking about here?
1885, believe it or not.
And did they always skate to something? Was there always music involved?
Always. And in fact, the inventor of the roller skate in 1760 was an instrument maker himself, and he's only really known by historians for his work with inventing instruments and not at all for the roller skate. And then only in the Industrial Revolution, when they had roller skating rinks, they needed music in order to sort of cover up the really atrocious sound of hundreds of people skating with metal wheels.
You'll forgive me if I poke fun a little bit. I couldn't believe that somebody actually let you write a master's thesis on all this. But, it's sounding far more interesting to me now, so I'm starting to understand it. I'm coming around it. That's probably a good idea.
No, I've spent many years defending the topic because it is an interesting history. It's about 250 years old, so it's not just in the last century.
So the first music I think of is organ music when I think about roller skating. Was that primarily what they used?
It was. I mean, in the Industrial Revolution era roller skating rink, they had brass bands, but that's technically not what people focus on. People focus on the golden era, the golden age, which was 1926 to the mid-50s, which is exactly what you talk about, the organ.
And how did an organ end up in the rinks?
That's probably the most fun fact of roller skating rink music, is that in 1926, arguably 27, when cinema started introducing sound into the theater, they had these huge organs they needed to get rid of in order to put the new sound systems in. And so cinemas sold these really expensive organs to roller rinks and arenas for next to nothing.
That's so great. We're going to hear, of course, a recording of an organ, but of course we're talking about these guys were playing live while you were skating.
That's right. So theater organists ended up finding jobs at roller skating rinks. So they once held very prestigious roles in society as sort of creating the backdrop to many movies and films. And then they ended up having to play for teenagers at roller skating rinks on Saturday afternoons.
So a typical rink might have heard this in the 1940s. It's Ken Griffin playing Doodle Doo Doo. That was Ken Griffin's Doodle Doo Doo, taken from an album called Organ Skating Classics. I'm Elliot Forrest. This is Soundcheck. In for John Schaefer today, joining me is Romy Paletti. She's a roller skating researcher and historian. Now, let's get back to the rinks, if we can. Were they largely segregated at this point during the late 40s, 50s?
Incredibly segregated. In fact, they were right at from the golden era onwards. There were African-American skate times and white skate times. So, and that depended largely on who they had skating and who they hired. So for the African-American skates, the roller skating rinks typically wouldn't hire organists to play during those times.
Oh, that's interesting. So it's not that there were certain rinks that were for African-Americans and ones that were whites. The single one would have different times for them.
Exactly.
That's very interesting. Anyway, so was there different music at all? Did the black skaters have different music for them?
There were, because organ roller skating rink music is really structured, very controlled, and they even had a union in the U.S. that was making sure and monitoring the movements. And when there was not that monitoring on the roller skating rink, people were able to do what they wanted. And so African-American roller skating people who would roller skate actually had a lot more freedom to express how they wanted to skate, and the music that they chose to play was on a record, so they could bring whatever music they wanted.
So during this time period, you might hear something like this. This is Louis Jordan's Saturday Night Fish Fry.
Now, if you ever been down to New Orleans, then you can understand just what I mean. Now, all through the week, it's quiet as a mouse, but on Saturday night, they go from house to house. You don't have to pay the usual admission if you're a cook or a waiter or a good musician. So if you happen to be just passing by, stop in at the Saturday Night Fish Fry. It was rocking. It was rocking. You never seen such scuffling and shuffling till the break of dawn. It was rocking. It was rocking. You never seen such scuffling and shuffling till the break of dawn.
Okay, that's already far more fun than the organ music. That was Louis Jordan and his Timpani Five, Saturday Night Fish Fry from 1949. This is Soundcheck. I'm Elliot Forrest from WQXR in for John Schaefer today. I'm speaking with Romy Paletti, who wrote her master's thesis at McGill University about the history of roller skating and music. Now, in the 1950s, moving up a little bit, rock and roll starts to really take off. Skating, pretty uncool at that point, right?
Completely uncool. It was too conformist for the baby boomers. So they just let those spaces go completely to waste. That is to say, mainstream African-American communities continue to use and utilize these spaces.
So something reared its head during the 70s, and what was that?
Disco.
So tell me how that happened. How did that really, was there one particular person or place where they started to put that together?
Well, the Empire Roller Rink in Brooklyn is the birthplace of roller disco. And that's probably because they were bringing, African-American DJs were bringing records from the 1920s onwards, and they were just bringing whatever was was popular in the community at that time, and eventually disco came. And it worked really well with roller skating, and all of a sudden it took off.
Well, we'll be talking to one of those DJs from the Empire in a little bit. DJ Big Bob Clayton will be joining us. So 1977, Saturday Night Fever comes in, disco is huge, they put the two together. This exploded as far as roller rinks are concerned, right?
It did. I mean, it really mainstreamed roller disco because it was really subversive at the time. It really only existed in Brooklyn and in a few roller skating rinks across the U.S. After Saturday Night Fever and a few other, Xanadu even brought that to the public's attention even more, that's really when everyone started getting invested in roller disco.
We have a fun clip that sort of shows this transition. The roller disco craze inspired several films, including this Patrick Swayze gem, Skate Town USA. Let's take a listen to this trailer from 1979.
Remember when roller skating was a lonely sport? The skaters were discreet. The skates were obsolete. And the background had no beat at all. Well, times sure have changed. Welcome to Skate Town USA, where boy meets girl in a celebration of love on wheels. From coast to coast, rock and roller disco is the most.
The movie called The Greatest Story Ever Rolled. The trailer from 1979's Skate Town USA. Romy, so tell me, when disco really hit these rinks, did the directions change? Did the rules of the road change about which way they would go and how they would monitor who would be where?
It did. And so, for example, people who became really invested in roller skating rinks were the record companies. And all of a sudden, there were a lot more liabilities that people were thinking about. So alcohol was something that was taken away from the roller skating rink.
Good plan.
And they don't really go very well together, roller skating rinks and alcohol, or roller skates and alcohol. But as a result, it ended up becoming a place for youth, not for people who would go to, let's say, Studio 54. And then all of a sudden, it became sort of a family-friendly affair, roller disco, which is not what it started out as.
And some of the record companies would actually take advantage of this by debuting albums at the rinks rather than the radio, right?
That's right. It was used as a platform to introduce people to the new sounds of disco. And they catered in a lot of ways the names of the songs or the names of the bands or the groups that would perform. It was definitely something that they considered heavily because they thought they could. It was the perfect demographic. It was teenagers with spending money.
And what made a good disco hit for roller skating? Was it certain beats per minute, or what really made it work?
Oh, that's a good question. I think a lot of it is exactly that. The beats and the RPM had to coincide perfectly with the movement of the roller skating rink, which is why disco worked so well. It was about rotation. It was about repetition. It was about all of these things that roller skating is at its essence.
And where are we today? You know, I was stunned as we started to put this whole segment together that there's one full-time roller rink in the New York City area, and it's out in Staten Island. I was stunned by that fact. Have they really disappeared around the country as well?
Yes and no. Roller skating rinks have a history, a legacy of dying and coming back. It's not something that is actually that new. At the turn of the 20th century, roller skating rinks were in the same state that they are right now. Some might argue that roller skating has never been more popular. Roller derby is really big right now. All different films have come out about roller disco and about roller skating, and in some spaces, it's still a popular place to go as a teenager.
You wrote your master's thesis on the history of roller skating and music, so can you tell us what you got on it?
I passed.
You passed. All right. Good enough for me. Romy Paletti, roller skating musical expert, has been my guest here on Soundcheck today. Romy, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
This is Soundcheck.
Skating down on the roller skate down.
little bit of the 1979 song Roller Skatin' Mate from disco duo Peaches and Herb. In a moment, we'll continue our discussion about roller disco with a look back at the self-proclaimed birthplace of roller disco in Crown Heights, Brooklyn. It's the latest installment of our Vanished Venue series. And later, Oklahoma native J.D. McPherson plays songs from his new album live in the Soundcheck studio. This is Soundcheck. This is Soundcheck, and I'm Elliot Forrest from WQXR, and today for John Schaefer, we continue our roll back in time with the latest installment of our Vanished Venues series as we remember important local venues that are no longer with us. Today we look at the self-proclaimed birthplace of roller disco, the Empire Roller Skating Center, located at 200 Empire Boulevard in Crown Heights, Brooklyn. The rink began as the Empire Roller Dome in 1941 when it was converted from an Ebbets Field parking garage into a state-of-the-art roller rink. After being sold several times, it eventually was renamed the Empire Roller Disco and became one of the hottest places to see and be seen on skates in the late 70s and early 80s. I am joined in the studio by longtime Empire Skate DJ Big Bob Clayton. Bob, thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
You lit up when you heard this song. Why was that?
That was one of the classics right there in the late 70s for roller skating right there. By Von Mason, Bounce, Skates, Rock, Roll, yeah.
How many people would come out to the Empire on a typical weekend?
Wow. Why don't you try a weekday?
Yeah.
We had a ladies' night, which was originally was on a Wednesday night, but then when I came aboard to play, I switched it to Tuesday night, and I used to average anywhere between 600 to 700 people on a Tuesday night. We ain't going to talk about Thursday night was another 3 or 4. Saturday night, adult night, was another 1,000, 1,200. Easy, when skating was in its heyday, from about 78 to about 89, skating was really, really big in its heyday then.
The Empire officially closed in 2007. That must have been devastating for you.
Yeah, that's 24 years of my life, history gone. Yeah. And it was nothing like an Empire. You know, I'm a DJ, which they call now a national DJ. I play all the skate parties, major ones around the country, around the world. And it feels funny now after the last 3 or 4 years not to have a home to come back to. You know, so Empire means a lot to me because that's where it all started out around 69 when roller disco hit hard. That was the place to be. And you didn't skate unless you skated Empire. I don't care what country or state you're from, you had to skate in Empire.
And people came from all over the country, right?
Just to say they skated Empire.
Right. You know? Let's put it out to the listeners. Did you guys go down to the Empire and skate to the hits? What were some of your favorite hits to skate to or memories of the Empire? Give us a call, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-WNYC, or leave a comment on the Soundcheck page at WNYC.org/soundcheck. Give us a little bit of the atmosphere on a typical big night in the heyday. What was it like in there?
Well, Empire was more like a family, you know, especially for the adults. Especially if you had a long day at work or you were just going to unwind just to take you away. Because skating is a spiritual expression of who you are. Wherever that music takes you to, that's where you skate to, whatever your skate ability allows you to get to. But Empire was like family. We was all like family and kind of grew up there. And I'm third generations, you know. So
I was lucky if I could just stand up and go around in a circle, but the people were really good. What did it look like when people were out there that were really hot doing this?
Oh, some people are fantastic, man. It's some of the moves they could do, you couldn't even think of. That's what I said. Spiritually, skating could take you to a whole nother level. So it's very hard for me to explain to what they was doing, but a lot of the dance moves. You got Bill Butler, who's teaching the jamming technique. A lot of us used to come down there and try to learn his jamming technique.
He'll be joining us in a little bit.
Oh, so I heard. And that's one of my mentors, you know, in the skate game. So skating is a spiritual expression. You could combine hustle, salsa, tap dancing, whatever you feel you could do on the wheels that your ability allowed you to do, you did it on the wheels, wherever that music took you to.
And would you drag your own records up to the up to the Empire?
No doubt. It's like having your, like a mechanic, you got to have your own tools.
Right.
And everybody plays spiritually different from their heart, you know, and mix differently.
And so what would be the difference between, say, the skating DJ and a dance DJ?
Oh, well, skating, you got to learn how to really mix. It's not like scratching and throwing in music. Mixing is you get the drum beat, keeping the same beat, so that's where they skate to, that beat. Now, if you stop the beat, they got to stop and start all over with you again. So you got to be a good mixologist to keep the music flowing.
Well, here's a tune. Love is the Message. Is this something? Yeah? You play this?
Oh.
All right. Here's the band MFSB. Love is the Message.
For real.
Roller skating music, Love is the Message, from MFSB from 1973.
Yeah.
We've got some callers and some messages on our website. Joel in the control room. What are people telling us, Joel?
Well, Elliot, we have really stirred something in the heart of Sandra from the Bronx. Sandra says, you know, there's nothing in New York anymore. Now I have to go all the way to Newark, New Jersey and Branch Brook Park. That's the new hotspot for serious rollers. Now, Sandra wants to give a shout-out to the original Skate Key roller rink on Allerton Avenue in the boogie-down Bronx.
For real.
Bronx. Sandra says, adult night was always the place to be. Learning steps, routines, sorry to see that rink close.
Yeah, you know all these places, right, Bob?
I played all of them at one time or another. Oh, yeah.
And we've got a, yeah, you mentioned Bill Butler earlier. I'm Elliot Forrest from WQXR in for John Schaefer, and you're listening to Soundcheck. Joining us now from Atlanta, Georgia, by phone, is a man who is known as the godfather of roller disco.
For real.
Longtime skater at the Empire Roller Skating Rink. Bill Butler, welcome. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
How did you get this title, the godfather of roller disco?
Oh, I don't know. If I had to tell you, I'd have to say it was just a fluke, I guess.
And you were skating at the Empire. You were skating at the Empire long before the disco days, right?
Yes, I entered the roller skating rink in 1957 in July. Mm-hmm.
And was it already desegregated there?
Yes, it was desegregated, and we had a lot of fun. Yes.
Now, a little bit earlier, Bob was talking about jamming. Why don't you tell us what that is?
Oh, first of all, Bob don't even know how much power he had. You're talking about a mixologist. It's just like taking a racehorse, a very timid mouth racehorse, and you got to give him his neck. You got to let him run. And when you do that, you do it through music. So he used to do that with us. We were like racehorses. He kept us at the right pace, the breathing, the whole thing. It's like a wave, and he used to create that. So he don't even give himself due credit.
Thank you, Bill. I appreciate it.
Oh, no sweat, my man. It's all good. Not be for you, I wouldn't be doing what I've been doing over the years, because you would make it mix up. I said, you know what? Whatever he plays, I'm going to learn to skate to it so I can develop what I've developed over the years. So you've been not given the credit you're due.
Bill, your book is called Jammin', Everything You Need to Know to Get Up and Boogie Down. So how does jamming different from just regular skating?
Well, the technique in itself has scientific gizmos about it. When I use the term gizmos, it refers to strides, different types of strides, and the breathing technique to develop speed at any given time. So I refer to it as skate stop. You have to be able to make the skates go. You have to know how to make the skates behave, and you got to know when to stop. So you can skate all night and never have to stop. But when it comes time to stop, you need to know how to do that.
There was one night, I think we've seen the picture, in which you skated with Cher, right?
Yes.
And what was that not like for you?
Well, first of all, it was a wonderful thing. I was a young man then. And we had a lot of fun. She was a wonderful person to be with. I was her chaperone for one evening. And I must say, that particular night, the rink was hot. That's the word.
Well, let's take a listen, because a lot of tunes got written and performed based on skating. This is called Hell on Wheels. This is Cher. Hell on Wheels from Cher, just a great song from the disco era that would be played in these roller rinks. You can actually check out Cher's video of this tune on our website. Let's go up to Harlem. Beverly, you're on Soundcheck.
Yeah, hi. This was such an interesting program to listen to. As a grandmother, laying here with my little granddaughter, I remember going on a bus with a gang of us coming from a club up in Harlem to go to the Empire Dome to roller skate, because we had a roller skating rink, but it was nothing like that one in Brooklyn.
And what was so special about the Empire? Why would you make such a big trip?
It was the way it was styled, and you could, when you bounced and roll around, you knew you had a place to hold on to the rail. If you had to fall, you had a place to grab onto. But most of us never fell. But if someone did take a spill, there was a place you could just kind of. I remember sliding away from the major rollers. You know, cause it was very difficult to stop when you first started out. But the dancing, the music, and the rhythm that we had, that we would just bounce to the music, like the first roll bounce, it was just awesome to do that. And then we'd get a bus back and come back up to Harlem and go to a club and have a couple of drinks and go home. But it was every Wednesday we'd have to go to the Empire Roller Dorm at that time.
Ladies' night. So Bob remembers you. Was that a full day? You'd make a full day out of that, right?
Well, no, we had early evening. Some of us were working. You know, we'd come early evening, and we'd go in the evening. Mm-hmm. And I think it closed maybe at 10 or 11.
No, it was 8 to 1.
We'd get back to town.
8 to 1.
And I know it's 1970s money, Bob, but what would that cost? What a night at the Empire, what would that cost somebody?
In the 70s, maybe about $5 or $6. And as it got into the 80s, maybe $7, $8. Now it's like, whew. $10, $12 to skate now.
And people would have big parties. What kind of parties would they
sometimes
bring
there? Sometimes they celebrate their birthdays, or sometimes people met in the roller skate rink and got married, had children, and they would celebrate their anniversaries. You know, like I say, roller skating is a spiritual thing, and it's like family, you know, and everybody celebrate everything there, bad or good. Maybe break up, divorces. You celebrate everything. You celebrate everything in skating.
Let's just go skating.
Let's go skating, yeah, because it releases the tension. It releases all the traumas of life. Sometimes skating takes you to another level.
Let's go out to Staten Island. Darren, you're on Soundcheck.
Hi, guys. Love the topic. I used to go to High Rollers on West 57th Street back in the early 80s.
Uh-oh.
And my favorite tune to dance to was Gonna Get Over You by Franz Jolie.
Gonna get over you, over
yes.
you.
Yes, yes, yes.
Bob's singing it for us here. So where do people go now? What? Tell us about the stuff you're doing now, Bob.
Well, she said the same thing, you know, being that we have no rinks in Brooklyn or New York City now. It's a shame, you know. But everybody goes to Branchville Park in Newark, New Jersey, off 280. And I'm blessed that I still play around the country. You know, I'm all over the country. I just came off a seven-week tour. I just ended up in Nashville the week before last, and we just go to Jersey now until somebody bless us. Hopefully somebody's listening and got some money. We can build another rink in Brooklyn or somewhere in Manhattan.
That's right.
We need it real quick, you know, because they try to do one up in Hotline.
The High Line.
I did the grand opening last Thursday.
Right, you were there, and it's only open for a couple of weeks,
for eight
really.
Weeks,
yeah,
eight
it's
weeks.
Not much.
It's a temporary floor.
Right, through September.
They didn't do this. They didn't do the concrete real right.
Yeah.
It's on a slope, and to me, it's dangerous. You know, first things first, I love this, the DJ with skaters, but safety's got to come first.
Right, right. Let me just get one more question for Bill. Mm-hmm. You're still teaching, right?
Yes, I still teach. Yes, I do.
For real?
That's incredible. Well, I want to.
He's almost 80. He ain't telling the truth. You got to see him skate.
I think the lesson is skating keeps you young, right?
For real.
Yes, it does.
DJ Big Bob Clayton and Bill Butler, thank you so much for talking about disco and skating with us today.
You're welcome.
Thank you so much.
This is Soundcheck. Up next, a live in-studio performance from roots rocker J.D. McPherson. This is Soundcheck.